Good morning. Tuesday, the 18th of August, and it is one of those quiet, humid, mid-August mornings where the feeds are busy, but nothing is shouting. I have four things for you, and what struck me while I was reading them is how little of today's news is about models at all. Top off your cup, let us get into it. First up, Stripe is reportedly closing an acquisition of OpenRouter for more than $7 billion, and the number is only the second most interesting thing about it. The deal comes roughly 90 days after OpenRouter raised a $1.3 billion Series B, and the last public revenue figure anyone has for the company is about $140 million annualized. That works out to something near a 50 times multiple, which is high in absolute terms and fairly ordinary by the standards of the top tier of infrastructure companies right now. What makes it worth your attention is what is actually being bought. OpenRouter is not a laboratory. It trains nothing, owns no weights, and publishes no benchmarks. It is a routing and metering layer that sits between applications and several hundred models from dozens of providers, normalizing the interfaces, arbitraging price against latency, and settling the payment at the end. Once you take that layer seriously as a business rather than as glue code, the logic is clean. Stripe's core asset is payment rails plus a developer-facing interface. OpenRouter's is inference rails plus a developer-facing interface. Both monetize per unit of activity flowing through them. Both get stronger as the number of upstream suppliers grows rather than consolidates. And both benefit from being the default integration point rather than the best individual product. So the bet embedded in $7 billion is a bet that the model market stays fragmented, that the frontier lead keeps being measured in months rather than years, and that the layer abstracting across models therefore captures durable margin while the laboratories compete theirs away. The reading I keep coming back to is aggregation in the classic sense. The broker does not need to own supply. It needs to own the demand relationship and the switching decision. And it needs suppliers commoditized enough that switching stays cheap. There's also a business model inversion sitting underneath, because a payments company that owns an inference broker can meter tokens and settle dollars on the same rail. That is precisely the primitive agentic commerce needs once software agents start paying for their own calls, and the fact that a major agent framework shipped deterministic per-session payment budgets the very same week suggests the market is converging on it from several directions at once. The caveats are real, that multiple assumes routing volume keeps compounding, which requires developers to keep wanting a neutral broker instead of contracting directly with one or two laboratories that would very much like to sell them a gateway of their own. And there is a quieter risk running the other way. If a broker becomes the default, then its rankings and its default model choices become an enormous and largely invisible influence on which models the world actually uses, with no obligation to disclose the economics behind those defaults. Moving on to our second story, which is a number that reframes the first one. Anthropic's annualized revenue run rate has reached roughly $65 billion, having added about $18 billion in 2 months. The level matters less than the slope. Adding $18 billion in annualized revenue across a single short window implies the enterprise and interface side is compounding fast enough to reorder the revenue ranking of the frontier laboratories regardless of who holds the benchmark lead in any given month. The analysis making the rounds is that this is the highest revenue laboratory while also being the most expensive per token, and the comparison being drawn is to a premium hardware vendor that takes a minority of unit share and a majority of industry profit. I would handle that carefully, because price per token is not the unit that enterprises actually buy. What they buy is completed work, a resolved ticket, a merged pull request, a past audit. On the cost per completed task measures that independent evaluators now publish, the models that are expensive per token are frequently not the expensive ones per task, because they finish in fewer attempts and burn fewer tokens of reasoning getting there. A model at $3 per task next to one at 5 cents looks like a 100-fold gap right up until you weight it by how often each one has to be run again. Two structural forces sit underneath the growth. The first is agentic workloads, which consume far more tokens per interaction than chat ever did, and which become extremely sticky once they are wired into an engineering organization's continuous integration, code review, and incident tooling. The second is coding agents specifically, where consumption scales with repository size and task horizon, rather than with headcount. Both push revenue ahead of seat growth, which is how a run rate moves this fast, without a comparable move in customer count. The honest caveat is that annualized run rate computed from a short recent window is a volatile statistic, and it says nothing at all about gross margin, which for an inference-heavy business is dominated by compute cost and by how much of that compute is locked in on long-term contracts rather than bought at spot. Third up, and this is the one I would read in full if you only read one, a paper on the archive called ClawGym 2 takes on something the field has been carefully working around. Agent harnesses, meaning the scaffolding that decides how a model calls tools, retries, branches, and reads environment state back, have carried a great deal of the recent progress on long horizon tasks. But they have been treated as fixed infrastructure during training. You optimize a policy against a harness. You do not optimize through it, because the harness is a large opaque program with its own control flow, its own retries, and no gradients anywhere. This work presents a unified black box reinforcement learning framework that trains general agents through complex harnesses without requiring the harness to be differentiable, instrumented, or even understood. The construction has three parts. First, a sandbox-based execution layer isolates each task environment and its harness inside a temporary sandbox, which is what makes large-scale concurrent rollouts tractable. Long-horizon agent tasks are slow, so throughput comes from running very many of them, side by side, rather than from making any single one faster. Second, policy optimization is decoupled from harness execution by placing a serving proxy right at the model boundary. Every model call the harness makes passes through that proxy, so the training system observes exactly the prompts and completions the harness produced without ever needing to know why it produced them. Third, because one episode may involve many calls with heavily overlapping prefixes, the captured calls get organized into prefix trees, which both reconstructs coherent multi-turn trajectories out of an interleaved call stream and cuts an enormous amount of redundant recomputation during training. What I find compelling here is the honesty of the premise, treating the harness as an unmodifiable black box, with the model boundary as the only observable interface, is a fairly honest description of how agents actually get deployed. The harness is very often a third-party product, a proprietary editor integration, or a customer's internal workflow engine, and it changes underneath you without warning. A training method that only needs to see model calls can therefore be applied to harnesses that nobody at the training organization wrote. The obvious tension, which the setup does not let you dodge, is that the resulting policy is fitted to that harness's particular quirks, so a policy trained through one retry and reflect scaffold may not survive contact with a different one. This landed across six separate sources in a single day, which tells you the community has started treating the harness, rather than the model, as the next surface worth optimizing. And for our fourth and final story today, Defense Department leaders have directed 30 American universities and specialized technology institutes to immediately audit their academic, financial, and research connections to foreign entities the government classifies as too risky to engage with. Each institution has to inventory research partnerships, funding flows, and personnel ties, and report back on the relationships that fall inside the department's risk categories. The mechanism is where the weight sits, not the headline count. Research security requirements attach to institutions rather than to individual grants, which means the compliance burden lands on university-wide offices and covers work funded from any source, not only defense money. For machine learning specifically, that reaches a very large fraction of the academic pipeline, because most frontier-adjacent academic work happens in laboratories with international graduate students, visiting researchers, and industry collaborations spanning several jurisdictions, and a great deal of it is published openly by design. The near-term operational effects will show up in three places: co-authorship and visiting researcher arrangements, compute sharing and dataset access agreements with foreign-affiliated entities, and the eligibility screening that runs ahead of new defense-adjacent awards. Institutions that fail an audit face restrictions on future department funding. Institutions that pass still absorb the review cost, which for a large research university is measured in staff years. What distinguishes this from earlier steps in the same policy arc is scale and simultaneity. 30 institutions ordered to audit at once, with specialized technology institutes named explicitly alongside traditional research universities. So here is what this morning was actually about. Not one of these four stories is about a model getting better, a payments company paying $7 billion for a router, a revenue figure that reflects how deeply tooling has been wired into engineering organizations, a training method whose entire contribution is learning through the scaffolding instead of around it. An audit that inventories the connections between institutions rather than the research inside them. Every one of them is about the connective tissue and about who gets to shape it, meter it, or inspect it. The models were the interesting part for a few years. The wiring is the interesting part now. And I suspect that is where the next few years of arguments are going to happen. The full digest has 97 items today if you want the rest. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, pay attention to the seams.